and still we march. On Saturday, March 6th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., CKLN is proud to bring you a live broadcast from Toronto's International Women's Day Rally. Featuring inspiring speakers and evocative entertainment, this annual rally highlights women's contributions to today's struggles for decent work, decent pay, human rights, dignity, peace, and justice. You can join us at the rally. It's taking place at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education at 252 Bloor Street West near St. George Subway Station. And after the rally, march through downtown Toronto to the Ryerson Student Campus Center for the IWD Fair. That's International Women's Day on Saturday, March 6th from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. only on CKLN 88.1 FM.
Radio. Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
Radio.
The Poor People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio. Radio.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to OCAP Radio here on CKLN 88.1. It's Friday, March 6, 2010. I'm going to start off the show as always, mentioning that if you're interested in learning more about OCAP or donating, please visit ocap.ca for more information about upcoming events and how to sustain the organization. On today's show, we'll have Lamia El Choufani from she'll be speaking about Israeli Apartheid Week, which is happening right now here in Toronto and in 60 other countries around the world. And our first guest for this evening, we're very lucky to have Sean Brandt here from Tiendanega Mohawk Territory. Sean will be talking tonight to us about the imposition of the HST tax on Indigenous communities across Canada. Sean, welcome to OCAP, and thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kat.
Yeah. So what's going on right now? The government has come down saying that the HST is going to be implemented and charged to Indigenous communities.
That's right. The HST is the combination of provincial sales tax and the federal tax, the GST. And in an unprecedented move, the government has decided that the imposition of that tax will extend to First Nations communities as well. And so what the Chiefs of Ontario have developed a strategy, and very similar to the call out in 2007 by Mr. Phil Fontaine, the Chiefs of Ontario have mirrored that call and have made a request that First Nations people stand up, stand on the lines, take to the roads, take to the railways, and do whatever is within our power to stop the imposition. Essentially, they said that the imposition date of July 1st, if it's allowed to proceed that far and be imposed, then First Nations communities, as they are now, will start that slide and cease to exist.
Wow. And historically, those taxes have never been imposed on Indigenous communities in Canada.
Well, they've never been imposed because there's relationships that exist between First Nations people and the federal government that are guaranteed by agreement, by treaty, and that's the relationship that's changing now. It really isn't necessarily, and I know that government itself is starting to put out that the Indians are only standing up, the Indians are only concerned because this is they won't be able to get the tax off. But in many of the First Nations communities, those that have inadequate or dirty drinking water, the people that live in absolutely abhorrent conditions, overcrowding in First Nations communities, isolations, we face social, economic, and political setbacks on a daily basis. And the imposition of a 13% attacks against us is not going to work to resolve those problems. And I think the government is short-sighted in its thinking that everyone needs to pay their fair share. Well, this isn't about that. This is about a real cost deficit that's going to be absorbed by families and First Nations communities, and it's going to take us into a degree of hardship that we haven't seen before. And that's what essentially the chief's message is. Although there is these agreements, this isn't about tax. This is about we want to advance our economic and social standing. We don't want to be pressed back into further depressed circumstances.
Absolutely. And what, along with this call to action, what have communities across Canada been doing to fight the imposition of this tax?
Well, beginning back in December, Batchewan and Garden River up near Sault Ste. Marie closed the border crossing for a number of hours. They've closed Highway 17. There was a rally in Toronto in December when the Chiefs took their original stand. There's a planned rally in Ottawa for March 10th, and people will be going from all over there. It's not the type of thing that's going to be won on, hey, hey, ho, ho, the tax has got to go. It's not going to be won on that basis. It's something that's only going to be won when and if we're able to draw together all the communities that are going to be affected by that, have people realize what those effects are going to be and what the benefits are if people stand up collectively. That's how it's going to be defeated. The Chiefs called for targeting the economy of the province. Right now it's fragile, and that suggestion worries people, but it has to be understood that we need to prepare in such a way for a fight to stop the imposition. And if the chiefs are allowed to sit at a table and have that dialogue with that federal government and convey the message of concern coming from the communities, then what we're hoping is that there will be that there won't be that imposition on July 1st, or there will be some sort of concessions worked out. But people are very angry, and it's something that government should be concerned about.
Absolutely. And has the government had any communication with communities, with First
Nations
communities?
No, and actually not only have they not had communication with communities generally, they've refused to meet with any of the chiefs, with the Assembly of First Nations, with the Chiefs of Ontario, who've been leading this call. They've refused in any way to sit down and have any meaningful dialogue. This is a straight imposition. No different than the residential school policy, no different than the Indian Act, no different than guns at the border in Akwesasne. This is another example of another imposition that's being put against Indian people without any knowledge or regard for the consequences of the action. And people are to the point now where we've been reeling having to deal with everything that's been put before us, and people are at the point now where we're not going to allow for another imposition to be placed against us that we have to deal with, that's going to take food from our children, that isn't going to provide water for our community, and isn't going to provide any economic or social benefit, and people are committed to stopping it.
Absolutely. In fact, it sounds like it's going to be a detriment to your communities.
Well, it most certainly is. And you know, the government rhetoric that's coming out, that this is just about taxes. And in our community of Tyendinaga, we've stood on the lines. We've closed the 401, we've closed the CN lines. We've stood on those issues that directly impact the daily lives of First Nations people, like drinking water, calling for real investigations into our murdered and missing women, and keeping our children in our homes. Right now, our children are being taken out two times more than the peak rate at the residential school experience, and you know that frustration and I guess trying to manage those things is difficult in and by itself, and this is something that's compounding that. But certainly, on Tyendinaga, we answered the call in 2007, and we put out that we're prepared to answer this call in 2010, and we want to suggest to people that that this simply isn't about attacks. This isn't about putting other issues aside in favor of standing up and stopping the imposition of attacks. All those other issues, those social issues that affect us, are what's ongoing in our daily struggles. But this is only going to complicate and further aggravate the circumstances that we deal with.
Now, Sean, tell me about the CN Rail Line $700 million expansion, right, of their rail line, and how that is connected to these issues.
Well, in Tynanega, they have a project that was funded by stimulus dollars of $700 million, and it's to run a third line on an existing two-line track. It's the one that we frequently shut down. It's known as the main line that runs between Toronto and Montreal. So without consultation, without any regard for the community, they started construction on this third line at the same time as announcing the imposition of the tax. And what the community has said is that we're not prepared to have a third line shoved down our throat while we're having the HST shoved up our ass. And people have stopped the construction on that mainline project. It's stopped right now. My understanding is that there was a work site that was burnt down a few days ago, one of the CN work sites. And this is on the way towards developing that campaign and having them to be made aware of the significant impact that's going to be realized within our communities, and that we're not prepared to take that without turning around and fighting back against that. And if we're going to take the hits, then they're going to take the hits. But if this is going to be a fight, then it's going to be a fight on both sides, and there will be casualties on both sides. But the HST is not going to come into our community.
Absolutely. Now, if for people listening out there today, how can they support this campaign to stop the HST and other encroachments on land and impositions on First Nations communities?
Well, the chiefs have called for some public assemblies. They've called for, unlike in 2007, there's no call for education campaigns. It's straight action. They've called for interventions into ministers' offices. They've called for road blockades, rail blockades. But I know Six Nations and surrounding communities in around the Toronto area are going to be engaged in actions, and those actions are going to be made public probably after March 10th. And people will be able to participate as they see fit in those actions that not only involve at the First Nations level in the First Nations communities, but they'll also be in the cities themselves. And people can go back to 1994 in an attempt to impose a tax which resulted in the Revenue Canada to take over an occupation. So if they think that they're going to bring this fight into our communities and cause that hardship, then we within those communities are not only going to fight there, we're going to bring it right into the heart of these cities and towns, and we'll show them how First Nations people can fight.
Absolutely, Sean, and you have a tremendous history of victories in that area, and I wish you well on this, and I know you'll succeed. Thanks so much for being here tonight, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it. I know you have to run. You're speaking right now or in about 12 minutes at the Ryerson's Library Building for the event called National Liberation from Turtle Island to Palestine. That's right now at 7 p.m. at 350 Victoria Street, part of Israeli Apartheid Week. Thanks again, Sean.
Okay, thanks, Kat.
Hello, and welcome back to OCAP Radio here on CKLN 88.1. What you just heard was Shit List by L7, and we just had Sean Brandt in the station here doing an interview about what's happening in First Nations communities across Canada, the imposition of the HST on those communities and the dramatic effect that's going to have and what those communities are doing to stop that. If you'd like more information, as always, keep up with OCAP.ca. We'll have information on those campaigns and that fight as it happens. And right now I'm here with Lama El-Choufani, who's going to be speaking to us about Israeli Apartheid Week, which is an annual international series of events held in cities and campuses across the globe. The aim of Israeli Apartheid Week is to educate people about the nature of Israel as an apartheid system and to build boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns as part of a growing global BDS movement, which has been happening here in Toronto. So Israeli Apartheid Week has been happening here in Toronto since 2005 and has now spread to over 40 cities worldwide. Lama, hi, and welcome to OCAP Radio.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Great. So tell me a bit about the history of Israeli Apartheid Week.
Right, so it started in 2005 by the Arab Students Collective. And it was sort of just, it happened gradually. It was an idea they came up with after, after the call from Palestine for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which was in 2004, I think. So it was sort of inspired by that. And, and it's developed since then, and it's been growing, and we're in our sixth year now.
You're in your sixth year, and it's in over 40 other cities worldwide.
Yeah.
Now, the Ontario legislature recently came down and mm-hmm. passed, I don't know what it's called, but they passed a ban on using the term apartheid?
Yeah, it was part of their resolution that sort of denounced that particular word, apartheid, within in the name of the, like, as part of the week. I don't think it was an official ban in the sense that it has any legal implications or anything, but it was just a sort of a symbolic gesture.
Condemning?
Yeah, on their part. And it was passed last week by the Ontario legislator, like you said, and it was brought up by Peter Sherman. He's a conservative MPP. And I think the idea was that the word apartheid is sort of has this hateful, or I think the word he used was odious, or that was the general idea behind why it was denounced.
And it was also denounced when there was only 30 members of parliament out of 107 were actually in the legislature that day. And is that are people feeling like that was a purposefully timed?
I wouldn't doubt that would be the case. It probably was.
It seems like
it.
Okay. Well, what I want to talk to you about Israeli Apartheid Week is March 8th is International Women's Day,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that Israeli Apartheid is having an event tonight with a woman who's a feminist activist from Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The woman speaking today is Rabab Abdelhadi. She's a Palestinian feminist activist and writer. Mm-hmm. She's made significant contributions to the struggle for Palestinian self-determination, and she does a lot of work around well-being of Palestinian women. She was actually one of the founding members of the Union of Palestinian Women's Associations in North America, and that was started in 1987 around the first Intifada or uprising. And it's really grown since then. It has, I think, around 2,000 members in 29 chapters across North America. And she's involved in a lot of coalition building projects that make links between diasporic communities in the U.S., U.S. communities of color, and women of color activists. So, yeah, a lot of her work revolves around diasporic Arab communities and issues of nationalism, ethnicity, race, that kind of stuff.
Right. And can you speak to some of the issues around the well-being of women in Palestine?
Right.
And how Israeli apartheid affects women specifically.
Right. Well, I think women, specifically Palestinian women, sort of are facing a sort of double discrimination, one as Arabs, as Palestinians, and one as women. So, we hope to sort of raise awareness on the kinds of issues that the kinds of violence that Palestinian women experience. And it comes in a variety of different forms. If we're looking at the West Bank, families are constantly losing their livelihood through loss of land, destruction of land. They're losing a lot of their... it's specifically due to the building of the apartheid wall that's happening sort of around the Green Line and actually cutting through the West Bank.
And so that cuts right through villages and homes, mm-hmm. and right through people's communities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, so it's basically tearing up land, uprooting whole orchards of sort of olive trees and citrus trees, and just completely destroying irrigation systems. but also as a result of this system, there's been an increase in sort of restrictions on movement. There are a lot of checkpoints, barriers. Women aren't able to sort of get from one village to another to access healthcare or visit family or friends or whatever it is that they need to do. That also applies for employment. It's really hard to sort of work in outside of your village. Gaza is, of course, sort of a smaller... it's sort of one of a bigger example of one of the smaller ghettos in the West Bank. So, and as we know, Gaza is still under siege and was attacked. There was an offensive in 2008, 2009. So, obviously, women and children suffered the most during that attack. And especially now we're seeing the effects of weaponry that uses white phosphorus and other kinds of toxic metals. There's been an increase in birth defects and miscarriages and, stuff like that.
And is that since the attack last year, or is that longer term, over many more years than that? Do you know?
I'm sure it has. It's something that's ongoing. The effects of these things accumulate over time. So.
And now the effects are starting to be seen with birth defects in children,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers of miscarriages are on the rise,
right.
in all of Palestine,
mm-hmm.
Or is it specific areas or?
I'm pretty sure it's a general. I'm not sure of the statistics, so I don't want to put one out there. But I think it is.
And so that's a problem. So it will be affecting as all of the atrocities will affect generations to come, and that will, mm-hmm. specifically in a very, very specific way affect women and children, and the future populations to come.
Right.
Has there been any decreases in the rate of infertility? Do they know that yet?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not certain, but I'm sure there is.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, will there be a Israeli Apartheid Week or Palestinian Women's contingent in the International Women's Day March tomorrow?
Hopefully, we're working on it. We're working with the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, and I know for sure that they're having a table out at the fair that's going to be here at Ryerson.
Great. So, let me just explain that. Tomorrow is the March for International Women's Day, and it's going to be happening at OISE at 252 Bloor Street. At 11 a.m. there'll be a rally and a march at 1 p.m. marching down to here to Ryerson, and afterwards there will be a fair, like an informational fair. So it sounds like the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid will have a table there, so you can find out more information, and especially find out more information about how to join the Boycott, Divestments, and Sanctions campaign.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, and so tonight is tonight's event the last event of Israeli Apartheid Week for this year?
Well, yeah, it's the last lecture, but tomorrow there's a sort of like a party. We're bringing in two hip-hop artists. We have Abir, a.k.a. Sabrina the Witch. She's a Palestinian hip-hop artist from Akka, I think. And there's also The Narcissist, and he's an Iraqi Montreal-based MC, so he'll be coming in too.
That's great. And where will that be held? We'll find that information, and it's up at IsraeliApartheidWeek.org.
Yes, that's right.
People can find that information to go to that. It sounds like a great party. And Lama, thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Okay, great. A few more things. So that was fabulous. Anybody who can get out to the last Israeli Apartheid Week event should do so in the hip-hop event tomorrow night. A brief announcement from OCAP. You can check OCAP.ca. Last week, OCAP had a fabulous demonstration where we went to a liberal fundraising dinner, a heritage dinner. OCAP was out. It was a fundraising dinner for the Liberal Party where tickets cost $950 each for people to go to this gluttonous dinner, and OCAP was there telling the Liberal Party and Liberal Party supporters that people on welfare are not able to live off of the money that they get, and people on welfare get far less than $950 a month. So that was absolutely fabulous. If you'd like to see a clip of that video, go to ocap.ca. And that is our show for this evening. Again, I'd like to thank Sean Brandt and Lama for being here and speaking to us on OCAP Radio on CKLN 88.1. Thanks to Mark for teching and to Deborah for helping out. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks here, same time, same place. Thanks.
And still we march. On Saturday, March 6th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., CKLN is proud to bring you a live broadcast from Toronto's International Women's Day Rally. Featuring inspiring speakers and evocative entertainment, this annual rally highlights women's contributions to today's struggles for decent work, decent pay, human rights, dignity, peace, and justice. You can join us at the rally. It's taking place at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education at 252 Bloor Street West near St. George Subway Station. And after the rally, march through downtown Toronto to the Ryerson Student Campus Center for the IWD Fair. That's International Women's Day on Saturday, March 6th from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. only on CKLN 88.1 FM.